positive with about a group.
So therefore, I say that I reject this quotation because it is taken out of its context and because it occurs only there, and it has never been understood by the Buddhists like that. They always have fasting, and I just thought of an example that you are supposed to shave your hairs off, which is the world of good, and, well, I can't see you, or you do it in Tessahara, I suppose. But you see, in China, this was not sufficient, but they put burning coals onto your head. You see, you find that all Chinese, the old Chinese ones, the big scars there. And then, if you wince ever so much, they said, is this how you have overcome craving already? You see, and off you went, and to think of something, to come again. Hmm. This is effective, isn't it? You can't deny this burning, you know what I'm saying? They all have it, God is very unpleasing, I don't have thoughts, you just think of it. Because, I've seen the sometimes the scars, they stayed there for about an hour. It was not just sort of ritual dubbing with fire. But you just had to show that you had overcome your attachment to the sensory world. And the only way to show it is to actually overcome it. It seems to me so self-evident. No, you don't seem to think so. And there is all religions, this is the perennial philosophy, there is no exception to it outside this blessed Bay Area. Now, as far as the Bay Area, as I recently said to a colleague of mine, said that the so-called spiritual revival in the Bay Area may either be a spiritual revival or it may be just one more pustule on the body of a patient called America. You just don't know. It's probably more, because otherwise I wouldn't waste my time on you. Pustule, you have a pustule.
Dr. Carter.
I do not say it's a pustule, but at times I get so annoyed with this kind of thing, you see, because the very basis of it is taken away. There you have the law.
Several weeks ago, in answer to Steve's question about celibacy, he said that often denying the sexual urge creates a greater problem than if you satisfy it.
Right.
How does this relate to an austerity or being celibate? Or denying yourself something that you want very much? Often, doesn't that create a greater problem?
That's right. Now, you see, it's again from case to case. I've tried this, but I'm not a celibate. Because what I found is that after 6 years of it, a component of my sex instinct, known as sadism, became extremely strong. And in fact, what happened is, why should you hear a horrifying story, that I lived in this wood and some old girlfriend of mine came along, and she says, what about it? And she said, oh. And then I just bit her all along here. And I said, my dear sir, this is certainly a bit circumvention of your sex instinct. See, now then, you are now supposed to then correct yourself, isn't it? And you see, I have somebody to correct you. So you see, you put all the time a penny in a machine, but you don't know what comes out of it. You would say, you would look at the person. And in my case, you would on the whole think that with this chef you could live without sex. All right. But the experience was, this was clear and pure, and undiluted suggestion. It has just been displaced from the more zoom-zoom into the sadistic form. And then, you see, you would probably, this is the main reason why I do not have that persistence. Because you think you cause more harm than good. You see that? All I say is you must have this thing called common sense. You try it. You see, I would say that I look at my experience, you see, that's what you haven't had, you see, that's why I say, that this did me the world of good, because it causes a detachment from the whole subject, because you haven't had it. But that obviously there are some components in this lovely sex instinct of mine, which cannot be got rid of like that. Now, then I ask myself, naturally, you see, I didn't have any guts to bite into the next organ, you might say, but that doesn't keep the game away from God. But the mere desire to bite into the necks of gods is as bad as doing the biting in Buddhism. You see, in Buddhism you assume that what counts is not the action, but the inclination. So I thought of myself, now, if I walk all the time, long here, you see, and the conversation is a sort of vampire thing, of course, probably, you see, if you think of it, how close it is, you know, a sort of vampire, want to bite all these gods, you know. It will do me no good. So do you follow this? You see, and the point is what I said last time, you can never have any certainty. And you must use your common sense. I mean, you can only give advice to an individual person. I have decided for right or wrong, celibacy is not it. Perhaps next time. Not this time, in any case, I mean, the whole thing doesn't interest me very much, but you completely get rid of it, there's no point. But it causes a sort of detachment, which allows you to be totally mindful with regard to. Likewise, you see, I nowadays eat always, I mean, really only what my wife produces, because if I would go on with these happy ways, I'm too old, you see, I'm nearly 70, and I get so ill. Now, there may be people who want to criticize everything, who say it would be good for you to die from eating nothing, but I don't. This is an answer, is it? I think that's all. I mean, it goes from case to case.
But there's a feeling that I get that the only way to a spiritual life is through austerities.
Yes, that's right.
But it's
using different things anyway, and not talking about it, finding out what works for yourself, that's all I can say.
What is your birthday then?
You can abstract it later. Make a system.
What's your birthday? Same day as him.
I think a day later. Late October 21st.
Yes, you see. October 21st, yes, that's right. On the 21st. You see, so therefore you have a certain degree of physical sensuality in it. You see, the point is, I mean, in my case, sex is practically entire imagination. And it feeds on itself. It's almost entire imagination. I have almost no physical urge at all. Therefore, I could say, well, I mean, we just imagine something else will change. But then I found from experience that I had not counted with one element in the sex instinct, which was immensely intensified thereby. And I am, in my astrology, a hate. I'm in a hate type, I have Aries, I have lots of things. So I thought it's an uncomfortable thing to have this impulse. So therefore, we just go on as before. So I would wait. But in your case, you would have a physical propensity, a physical sensuality to work off in the life. You're Jewish, too, aren't you? The Jews are sensuous, what to begin with. And then in addition, you are the Jewish library. So therefore, I ask myself, what do you do with it? Don't you see? That's what I ask myself. Now, if you deny it completely, I mean, for instance, you know, in England, we have a thing called the English spinster. One of the, I'm just reading, because of the television, I am reading Point Counterpoint, and I read the book. And there I am reminded of the English spinster. Now, the English spinster is in most cases a virgin. Real physical virtue. So she has no idea of it. But she has displaced the entire feelings she would have, where we must not see where it is, into their mouths. And so they have a sort of sensuousness when they have tea and so on, which shows that the entire sex is displaced from where it normally would be supposed to be in a woman, into their mouths. Isn't it? That's the one thing. But in addition, now there's no harm in it, you would say. I mean, at least no babies result from it. You see? There's no harm in it. But it leads to an absolute viciousness when the sexual relations of other people are concerned. A viciousness of such elementary force that they have no control over it. I mean, for instance, I find one of our greatest scholars is Miss Horner. And guaranteed birth, no one swear to it. It turns out that the Pali text society publications, you know, are transferred from Luzak and Company to another firm. So I arrive on the scene, and I say, you are mad. I mean, you have a good will for about 35 years for one firm. Why give it to the other one? Well, she said, we had a meeting on this, and she said she would resign. If this were not, she was voted down. You see, there's a committee member. And she has spent £50,000, which is a lot of money, on printing all these books during the last 10 or 20 years. And she resigns, and of course, we cannot allow that. So then I say to this fellow, what actually the matter is, what's the trouble? Well, of course, you know that the new people in the firm are not married. Now, that is sufficient. This is typically the displacement, you see, of the disappointment. That the whole polytech society is thrown into a world with, you see, you have no idea the amount of inconvenience caused by it. And I knew this, you see, this is very near to me, because for 18 years, my Venus is in the seventh house, the house of marriage, which means that my marriages are invariably highly irregular. And my second marriage consisted that for 18 years, we could not marry, because the first woman, a Jewess, became a Catholic and refused to produce a divorce. Until I got the better of her. Now then, for 18 years, I couldn't remember then. Which really, I mean, I couldn't care less. I mean, complete joke. But we go to La France, my wife and I, to La France, and I, being great and famous, am invited to the Maison Boutique or something like that, Madame La Fuente, and Lunsbury, some Yankee woman called Lunsbury. And we arrive there. And of course, the star turn of the evening, the great and famous, has arrived, you see. And so later on in the bulletin, as you see, nous avons eu l'honneur, we have the honor to see Monsieur le Docteur Conzi et sa femme charmante. So thereupon, Miss Horner says, Dr. Conzi, I hear that you have a wife. And it would be very nice of you if you would once introduce her to me. Now, this was nothing. At that time, the Malala Sekara started to do the Dictionary of Buddhism, which is published in Ceylon. And they wanted a list of sponsors, which I was one. You see, again, the great and famous, I've just my name on it. And she said she would refuse to have her name on it by man was on it. Now, you see, so therefore what you find, this is just an example to give you of the absolutely elementary, titanic hatred which the English spinster have for any form of irregular suarisome. So, what I now want to say is that what they do is they displace their feelings, I mean the feelings directly, the organic feelings into the mouth. But in addition, the self-denial causes a hatred which is similar to me biting into the necks of the girls. So you see, if you therefore muck about with this austerity, you must look for this. And therefore you should not do these things normally on your own. Because you see, I mean, if they say, if I do, I mean, I would just say, good Lord, there he is, has God uses anything. Now what is he doing? Masturbation first, of course, that's what else could he do? Well, you keep him away from women, you see, in any case. Reading time, you know what is it nowadays? Well, you get everything nowadays. Playboy and all these kind of things to entertain yourself. But what I would find, look for, would be what we call in Latin misogynist. That you suddenly see, now there are far too many women here in this society of ours, you see, here, wherever you are. Etc. And in any case, they are far too cheeky. And so on, you see, and so you go on. And then one would begin to wonder, you see, because, and don't you follow this? I mean, it is only a question that without supervision, this is a form of self-murder very often. You see, you find, I mean, I found, I mean, especially this celibacy, that the price is always terrific. It's quite terrific if you know the people. But see, the Catholic Church has means of dealing with it. You see, I mean, they are extremely skilled people. I don't know here about them. Maybe a lot of ignorant Irishmen, but I'm speaking of Europeans, you see. I mean, for instance, one of my very best friends is Lamotte, a great scholar. He shows no real traces of it. I mean, he's a complete celibate. He doesn't know what a woman looks like without clothes. In fact, he asked me about it, you see. I was trying to explain it. Horrifying. That's and he just took this, I mean, this is born. I mean, this was, there was nothing. And I know him very intimately, I mean, just as if it was my direct brother. And he has no after effects at all. But that is because they have what is known as a spiritual guide, and there are other people who all the time look for things like reading dirty books or speaking ill of women or things like this. And then they correct it. So what I'm trying to say is that you are constrained to do this to a great extent in a vacuum, and so you run much greater risks than people who are in a flourishing organization like the Belgian. I mean, it's one of the Catholic Church there, you see, which is extremely eminent and profound people.
Well, all that connects up pretty well with the thing you say here about magic and so on, where if you get involved in performing or believing in certain magic, so on, these powers, various powers,
in fact, you say here that actually, in one part, in your reference to the hostile powers and the underworld powers, you say that what I...
Oh, the rot test, the yes, that's right.
I interpret to mean that you have to be ready to die.
You must be ready to die, and in Tibet you have the famous... ritual of the Kshatpa ritual, which you can read, look up. Alexander David Neil,
yeah,
he always writes
it up. There's a whole chapter, and she talks about this guy out in the moor, wherever it was.
Yeah, that's right, Kshatpa. You see, that is the ritualized form of it. You conjure them up and surrender to them.
Mm.
You see, I mean, you could easily, if you wanted to discuss it, you could say, if I wanted to bite into the necks of the dear girlies, I should have surrendered myself to that. You could have just said it. But I thought it's more convenient not to. But you see, you have normally, if you have a wonderful organization like that, like Catholic Church, they would, I mean, in that part of the world, they would guide you on it. They always think of something. But it is quite terrific. But, I mean, not only do you rouse your own hostility because the instincts do not like to, but you have these actual forces, and I knew about this because I did all this in a wood, you see, not in a stinking city with a lot of cars. And there the trees, they just sprouted forth. I mean, it becomes such a reality. And therefore, the ultimate way of getting over that is this complete surrender, which I was not going to use, but you see from the Tibetans that they have it even as a doctrine, the Kshatpa. And it is just, it means cutting off, you see. Cut yourself off and say, have it. Yeah.
As I recall, in that particular instance, the guy actually experienced vividly being completely pulled apart.
Pulled apart, yes. No, you have it as another book by, if you doubt, Alexandra, by a German professor called Hoffman. The Buddhism of Tibet or something like that. He describes it also very nicely.
Well,
I mean, the whole, you see, I mentioned before, all this goes back to Egypt. You see that there you have the dismemberment of Osiris and all this kind of thing. And we have this all it's all exactly the same.
Yeah. In connection with that, you also say, right after that point where you say that, as you, this is page 103, toward the bottom, you've just finished saying that it demands a considerable degree of indifference to one's own individual existence, which I interpret to mean that you have to be ready to go.
Yes.
And then you say that there are indications that the practice of smriti or pratyahara awakens these forces in a manner which is difficult to account for.
Yeah.
Now, difficult, do you mean that it's difficult to understand how it happens, or it's difficult to handle, or what exactly?
No, difficult to account for, this is English. It means you cannot explain it. Oh, you cannot easily explain it.
How it happens.
How it happens. You see, I mean, if you look at what is assumed to be known about the laws of the human mind, it's rather surprising that this should happen. I mean, that's what it's saying.
So it takes you by surprise, in short.
It takes you by surprise, you see. And took other people, you see, I mean, I'm not entirely alone in all this, took it by surprise, you see, that this should happen at all. Because, I mean, you think, there you are, I mean, you take Smriti, you see, you just see, they're sitting, they're standing, and so on. And you think this is all perfectly rational. And I used to do that in my this Buddha of mine, this huge. And then, God, look, what hell is let loose against you, you see? And you absolutely don't see the similarity between your good and your right foot. I lift my right foot, you see, that's the right foot, and then you lower the right foot, and so on. All this kind of thing, the powers, you see. And then suddenly you see that lots of things are there which they were before, and you see the whole system. You see, I mean, the human mind, I mean, modern psychology is very superficial because it has taken no notice of the spiritual life of man at all. I mean, it's totally unknown to these guys. I mean, they have no idea what they're talking about.
Just like when we said the impression of God is morning.
You see, and the whole point is, you see that academic psychology tries then to explain all this as projections of your own unconscious. But I do no longer do so, you see. I mean, I think this is a theory which explains nothing. I mean, all you have to do is an enormous pot, which you call the unconscious, and put in anything you can think of. Yes, so we have been clearly fine.
We have more time for
us. Oh, God. Well, we have here. Have you thought of your question?
I don't think I'm going to ask.
No, yes. Well, just one more. Can we have just one more? Yes.
I had one more question. I've asked some questions. Maybe it's because I am the only one who read this.
More than the others.
But this was a question that relates to a discussion we had last week about the ferocious, I don't know what the word is, the ferocious aspect of these bodhisattvas versus the benign aspect.
Yes,
and I wanted to clarify in my own mind whether these hostile forces or ghosts, demons, and devils and so forth, is this a different order of being or order of creature than the what is known as the ferocious aspect of these bodhisattvas? Is this a different kind of entity, or is this, are these hostile forces in some sense actually ferocious aspects of the liberating and beneficent forces which appear in the third.
Yes, I mean, they are under the fourth. They come under, what have we got in the third? Yes, they are either the third or the fourth.
Bodhisattva, in both their ferocious and beneficent aspects, are an aspect of the third, fourth.
Tell them.
So the second realm is the earthbound elemental forces,
you see. I mean, you have to use the example. I mean, in my case, I mentioned it before, my beneficial bodhisattva is Manjushri. Right. And his terrific form is Yamantaka. These two belong together. And they are the same thing. But the desire to bite into the necks of girlies would be a form of vampires, or so. I mean, this in magic would be put into them. That would be a form of vampirism, obviously. I mean,
yeah, okay.
You know the difference. Well, because what's along here, you see, and you get that in the films. I mean, I know nothing about it, but I was most surprised at this thing. It was not a long time, surely. So therefore, it would be a form of disembodied vampirism, which is something completely different. And, I mean, if you were, Yamantaka, he might take her and cut her head off and make a skull out of it, put blood into it, or things like this. But you were the world of good, and really some noble purpose would be found in your existence. But he would not bite him to the neck. I mean, and you see the difference.
Yeah, I do.
And it is thus yes, I mean,
okay,
as long as you see it.
I see, I thought so. I just wanted to make sure. I thought that was what was the case.
You see, it's just a different side of the same coin. I mean,
there's the liberating wisdom involved in those demonic bodhisattvas.
Yes, that's right.
Wisdom aspect, where there's not that much in.
No, no. The more demonic forces, they tie you still further. And also cause a sense of guilt. I mean, if I could bite into the necks of these girlies without having a sense of guilt, it would be a lovely thing to do, but I don't, you know. It's an awful thing to do, I don't. Whereas the way in which this kind of spiritual force removes obstacles and so on, you can be completely ruthless and have not the slightest sense of guilt about it, because then you are animated by the Yamantaka.
If you know what you're doing.
You know what you're doing. So I think the sense of guilt is a very important token in this, you see.
So this is a sign which can discriminate.
No, which helps to discriminate, as I would have thought so, yeah. Now, whether I will see you again, of course, is a very different question. Because next week I cannot, because we have a Scorpio as the head of the new department of Indic studies, who expects us to, well, go every evening to lectures and stay up till about 1 or 2 in the mornings and things like this. And I just don't have the energy, you see, I cannot do it. And if you knew Fritz Stahl, you would be careful not to annoy him, you know, because the entire Buddhist program depends on his goodwill, you see. And so, I am in his hands, you see. And after that, probably, the week after, we will move to Santa Barbara, because we have got a house and pay double rent anyway. And my wife is one of those people who usually thinks it's better on the other side of the fence. And so she wants to go to Santa Barbara, so. It would not surprise me if we both would go to Santa Barbara. Yes, that is the situation. And I had not reckoned with that, because he is a very cunning Scorpio who told me all this only 2 days ago by phone at 9 o'clock in the morning. He's never been known to speak to anybody before 11. So I smelled a rat, you see, when I suddenly heard Fritz on the phone. And there it was. We expect this and we expect that. And I'm afraid that I could have told him to shut up, but it is unwise, because we have mobilized several hundred thousand dollars for Buddhist studies, which he might spend on some barbaric Hindu studies instead, you see. So we must keep on the right side. In any case, I mean, you can play this back as often as you like. I will tell her about it.
Dr. Kondo,
do you feel that Bach could be included with Boma and the Leia Greenbelt with his music?
Oh, Bach, wonderful, yes. It's almost completely spiritual, yes. Completely.
And
it's all the world.
Would you discriminate particularly any of the works of Bach as opposed to any other?
No,
the entire opus?
No, not the entire opus, but I mean a lot of it. I just heard one in my ear. I don't know too much about it, but I mean, this is the spiritual sound, you see. There's almost nothing earthly about it, you see, and it's not. It's almost the exact opposite. We just wasted money by seeing Offenbach, the Gerolstein opera, you see. Now,
Offenbach, interesting.
Yeah, it's Offenbach. And this was purely sensuous music, you see, so that would be like playing. There's a lot of music. This is very sublime. There's a sort of sublimity about it.
Bach was a very worldly man, as I understand it, however.
He was a man who was a Lutheran who fulfilled his function in society in order to have time to do everything else. You see, if you have a society in which you fit in, the best thing is to become a good yoga with a fat stomach and so on, because they allow you to do You see, our difficulty has been that in recent years civilization has decayed to such an extent that the intellectual classes go against the grain all the time. I mean, we are getting annoyed. I mean, there's nothing which ever confirms me at all. I mean, this pustule remark, I mean, it's just a joke.
It's quite clear.
To the entire intelligentsia field. So in consequence, I spit into everybody's face. But if I were in a civilized society, I mean, say in the Germany of the early 19th century and so on, I would call it, because it would blow them as a sort of golden watch to try to cause as little trouble as possible, because I could put my entire work unhindered. Nobody would interfere with it. I mean, nobody ever said to Bach, my dear chap, you don't do this because you're a Bolshevik, but he did it. So they are very favorable periods, but it has been the result of the last century or more that the creative intellectuals are just annoyed. I mean, they're all annoyed. I mean, no exception. I've never met one who isn't annoyed. And so we always take up, I mean, things like Bolshevism or Buddhism or anything to annoy them. And I'm quite sure that if I was not annoyed, I would be just a good Christian, as many of my forefathers were. It was sort of pietistic brand, you see, terribly. The pietism in German, but you don't have that here like you.